Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premiere Networks on Saturday, October 15th, 2016. This is episode 1331. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by IT Pro TV. IT Pro TV is an easy, entertaining approach to online IT training. For a free 7-day trial and 30% off the life of your account, go to itpro.tv/techguy and use the code TG30. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk computers and the internet and home theater and digital photography and smartphones and smartwatches and virtual reality headgear and electric cars, autonomous vehicles, anything with a chip in it, anything computery. 88, that's the technical term. It's computery. 88, that's what my mom says when people ask, what does your son do? It's computery. 8888-ASK-LEO is the phone number. 888-827-5536. That's toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Outside that area, you can still call because we're heard all over the world thanks to the internet. And if you're going to do that, just use Skype to call. Skype Out can call a toll-free number in the States for no cost to you, I think. I think that's pretty much how it works. And I know because we leave people on hold for hours and it still costs nothing. Not intentionally. Not intentionally, I promise. We get to you as quick as we can. I'm just a kind of a windbag. 8888-ASK-LEO. Sometimes I take a long time with the calls. I was asking, we have a great chat room, by the way. Kind of the kids behind the scenes, the kids in the back, throwing spitballs and all of that stuff. Sometimes they talk about what we're talking about. Sometimes they talk about random things. I asked, and somebody in the chat room said, you know what you should talk about? I said, what should I talk about today? Should talk about the president saying we're going to counter cyber attack Russia for hacking the DNC. And I thought that was interesting. He said a proportional attack. The Obama administration asks the CIA. I'm not sure that's the first person I'd ask, to be honest. But anyway, he asked the CIA to prepare revenge cyber attack against the United States. Oh, the calls are coming in. Let me mute the ringer because I know Kim Schaffer is here. She's going to be answering those calls. Actually, is it Heather Hammond? Maybe it's Heather Hammond. I can't quite make it out yet. Yes, it's Heather Hammond sitting down at the phones. There she is. 8888 Ask Leah. So, what is a proportionate response to a Russian hacking group trying to disrupt the U.S. election? First of all, we've got to kind of stipulate that the federal government knows who's doing the hacking. They say it's the Russian government. So we have to, I guess, I mean, we can contest it, but they have all the information. We have none. We do know it's hard to know who's doing the hacking because, well, a decent hacker covers their tracks in such a way that it's kind of might look like somebody's doing it and somebody else is doing it. So we don't know for sure, but the federal government says we know. So the White House is considering launching a cyber attack. This is what happens, by the way. It kind of escalates, and then they launch their cyber attack, and we launch ours. And the problem is we're all kind of vulnerable, like really vulnerable. You hope it doesn't escalate. This is from an article in the Independent UK publication, independent.co.uk. NBC News, though, got the scoop. Anonymous officials, I always worry when I see that. Anonymous officials told NBC News that current and former officials with direct knowledge of the situation say So there you go. There's another one to take with a grain of salt. We've heard these anonymous sources get it wrong more than a few times. Anyway, say the CIA has been asked to deliver options to the White House for wide-ranging clandestine cyber operations designed to harass and embarrass. That's the quote. Embarrass the Putin regime. Sources did not elaborate. I imagine somebody in a garage in a trench coat. Hey, psst, have you heard? They did not elaborate on the exact measures the CIA was considering, but said the agency had already begun, I don't know what this even means, opening cyber doors. Did they take the blue pill? Is that, how do you open cyber doors? Selecting targets and making other preparations for an operation. Former intelligence officers. See, former means maybe they're not so connected. I don't know. Former intelligence officers told NBC News the agency had gathered reams of documents that could expose unsavory tactics by Russian President Vladimir Putin. It's funny in a way that Putin's going to be collateral damage in this horrific U.S. presidential election. Wow. Joe Biden told Chuck Todd on Friday and during Meet the Press, we're, quote, sending a message to Putin. It will be at the time of our choosing and under the circumstances it will have the greatest impact. They still hold elections in Russia, but I think the outcome is usually foregone conclusion. But I could be wrong. When asked if the American public will know that that message was sent, the vice president said two words, hope not. What the heck are they going to? I know what they're doing. They're going to make them all use Windows 10. That could be it. Why not? That's what we should do. We should airdrop Windows 10 packages all over Moscow. That would be punishment. Oh, make it worse. Windows 8. Oh, give them Windows 8. Oh, that would be embarrassing. Actually, that embarrasses us more than them, doesn't it? Retired Admiral James Stavridis told NBC News that the U.S. should attack Russia's ability to censor its internal internet traffic and expose the financial dealings of Putin and his associates. This could only lead to disaster. The new Cold War, it's a cyber war. Oh, man. And you thought this was just all fun and games, this show, all about, you know, the toy store. Meanwhile, Samsung has now, not only have they discontinued the Note 7, they say there are 68 cases now of new Note 7s blowing up. You know, the ones that were fixed in the U.S. No, wait, I got that wrong. That can't be the right number. Some larger than one would expect number. They did a safety recall. And now they're saying, yeah, we're giving up on that one. Mostly because, according to the New York Times, they can't figure out what's wrong. The New York Times story said, the phone, they put so much new technology in that phone, they don't understand how it works. Samsung. And they can't figure out why they're blowing up. Now, to tie these two stories together, we could ask Samsung to give Samsung Galaxy Note 7s to the Kremlin. That might work. And according to the FAA, as of midnight, it will be illegal. Or actually, it's the Transportation Department. It will be illegal to carry a Note 7 on any flight in the United States on or off noon tonight. I mean, noon today. Well, noon, I guess it's happened already, so don't. Stop. If you still have a Note 7 in your pocket, what are you, nuts? There's a stream, somebody set up a stream with a plugged-in Galaxy Note 7 on a wall, and this is a live video stream waiting for it to blow up. It might be a long wait. They don't all blow up, you know. Well, so far. Transportation Department says if you are caught with a Note 7 on or off, it will be confiscated. You may face fines. Put it in your checked luggage. That could lead to increased risk of a catastrophic incident. You could face prosecution. the Department of Transportation, the FAA, and the Pipeline and Hazardous Materials Safety Administration, known as the PHMSA. PHMSA, the PHMSA. Did you know we had a Pipeline and Hazardous Materials Safety Administration? Banning the phones. So if you still have one, give it back. Samsung's now offering you $100, I think, to take another Galaxy of or Samsung phone of any kind. Hey, let's talk right after this. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. ask Leo. Here's a good question from Greg Bilton in the chat room. Would you be wary about buying other Samsung phones at this point, like an S7? I've had an S7, which is like kind of like the mini version of the Note 7 since it came out. Never had a problem with it. Never even got warm, as far as I can remember. Netcompu says, I've got a Note 7 and I'm not afraid to use it. Hey, it's Heather Hammond. Hey, Heather Hammond. Hey there, hi there, ho there. Back from Old Cella.
Geezerpalooza.
Geezerpalooza. How was it?
Oh, here, let me put my granny glasses on.
Did you see the Nobel? Did you see the Nobel laureate?
Sure did. The first song he played of the first entire weekend was Everybody Must Get Stoned.
Yeah, there you go. That's Nobel Prize winning literature.
Exactly.
Rainy Day Women, number 35 and 37 or something. So, but it was fun. You saw Roger Waters, Pink Floyd. You saw Dylan, the Rolling Stones.
In the same night.
That's amazing.
I mean, it's out of this world. Neil Young, who being folks in the Bay Area, we get to see him quite a bit. But he was really great. He was really on, you know, he can be a little cantankerous. But and he was that night, but he was a ton of fun.
Was he the best?
No. Oh, God, no.
Who is the best?
You know, that's such a toss-up between Paul McCartney and the Rolling Stones. But I have to say the Rolling Stones, just because we danced so much to all of that.
Did you see that McCartney performed a show in a tiny club up north?
North of here?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. No, I didn't
see
that.
Yeah, tiny little club. Maybe it was somewhere in California. But this is all not germane to the issue of Russia hacking us all. Now we know what was going on with our phones, right?
Do we?
Yeah, I think we do. It was them commies. Wait a minute. They're not commies. Are they commies? They're not commies anymore. We can't call them commies.
Comrades.
John says they're comrades.
Comrades. Tovarish. So we have many comrades on the phone right now. Mm-hmm. Who should I talk to there, young Heather?
Let's talk to Marilyn. She's calling from Compton. That's from, horrible. I sound like the godfather there.
From Compton. Anyway. No, that was very good. She's straight out of Compton?
Yeah. And she's like, Leo, there's got to be a better wife.
Oh, my. There's got to be. Thank you, Heather. Good to have you back from Old Cella. Hello, Marilyn.
Hey, guys. Hey, Leo.
How are you?
I'm blessed, but thank you for
Oh, that is a very nice way to answer that one. I'm blessed.
Mm-hmm.
We all are blessed, really.
Yes. Thank you.
Yeah. Getting to walk on this planet. What can we do for you, Marilyn, to make it even better? Make your day even better?
No, just kidding.
Fire!
So, Leo, my issue is I'm trying to obtain Wi-Fi or internet service from my area, which is Compton CPT.
CPT, represent.
Yes. So, my issue is I have some of these two major companies. One is a phone company, and the other one is a local cable company. And they're both charging me so much. And every time I use the internet service, after a week, I get, you used up all your...
Oh, that's terrible. Are you doing it on your phone? It sounds like you're getting it wirelessly. You're not getting it into the house wired?
Into the house, I'm getting it through a router.
Oh, you are? Okay. Well, why is there a bandwidth cap?
Yeah, there's a cap.
What are the caps?
I have no idea. I call...
This is a scam, by the way, from internet service providers. Yeah. There should not be a cap. Even Comcast has a terabyte cap, and they're saying, well, that should be plenty for anybody. But it's a scam. It's just an excuse to charge you more because bits are free. And once they put in the infrastructure, pouring more bits down the pipe more often is not a big deal. So I think that this is all bogus. But if you're running out of bits in a week, then they're really taking advantage of you. So you can get it from who's your carrier there in the 424? Is that Frontier down there? Were you part of that switch?
No. Can I say the name?
Of course you can.
It's Dish.
Oh, you have Dish. That's why. It's a satellite. It's satellite. Okay. So satellite internet. It's not through AT&T. It's Dish for your internet.
Right.
Ah, yeah. Okay. That's different. That's different. They do have bandwidth caps. Sometimes they call them fair use caps because they are very constrained in how much bandwidth they can pump up to that satellite and back down to you. So you'd be much better off. So I stand corrected. What I said applies to landline companies that are coming in on the ground. They have far more capacity than a satellite does. Right. And there's other problems with Dish. A, you have to spend a lot of money up front, didn't you, to buy the equipment?
Absolutely.
And then B, there's a lot of latency, which is the amount of time it takes for you, the stuff, you know, your command in the browser get up to the satellite, down to the internet. The page then has to go up to the satellite and down to you. And that's called, the amount of time that takes called latency, and that could be half a second. It makes it terrible for things like Skype or internet gaming. It's okay for email because, you know, you don't care how long it takes your email to come in. But, I mean, within a second or two. Are there landline options in your area? There must be.
I live in CPT.
And they don't want to come in the neighborhood, eh?
They're scared.
So that is so awful. I can't believe that you can't get from the phone company. Is there cable television in your area?
And our choice right now, we're trying to get Charter because Charter for my area would be much more reasonable. But right now there's a bidding war between Time Warner and Dish. So Time Warner's winning, so we need to wait until Charter comes to our area.
This is the equivalent modern day redlining.
Exactly.
Isn't it? It's saying, "Oh, that neighborhood, no, we don't want to we don't want to do business with that neighborhood." Exactly. It's redlining.
Exactly.
And it's criminal. It should be criminal. I don't know if it is, but it should be criminal.
2016 and this madness is still going on.
That makes me very sad. And it is, by the way, one of many economic ways you can keep people down, isn't it? Well, keep them off the internet.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that makes it harder for them to get an education, harder for them to participate in our democracy, harder, and that's not good. So, it sounds like you're working with the community. I mean, I think the community as a whole could do something about this, or you're trying to get Charter in there. That's probably a good idea. Time Warner, by the way, is not bad as a cable company. But in general, landline, whether it's from your phone company or your cable company, will be better than satellite internet. That's not the best way to go. I'm sorry that's happening. That's just not right. I'm going to call my buddy over there at Sonic and say, you got to go in there. Put fiber in Compton. Show him. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. There's an article. There's a good article. I saw this. PS Chops in an Ars Technica. It almost seems in this day and age impossible, but it's true. It's a kind of redlining. The largest non-cable internet service providers collectively offer faster speeds to 40% of the population in wealthy areas compared with 22% of the population in poor areas. Now, that's, of course, there's more money in the wealthy areas, and so there's, you know, a financial incentive for them to do that. But, yeah, and I don't know what the answer to your question, Marilyn. Are you still there, Marilyn?
I'm still here.
Yeah, we're off the air because I had to go for commercials. But the answer to your question is really to shop around, I guess. I don't know what your choices are. But in general, your best deal is going to come through your phone line. Are you sure you don't have AT&T internet? You have TV through Dish.
Well, I have Sprint, and I have Sprint for the phone.
Yep.
And I have Dish for the cable.
And your internet comes from a router?
Right, from the Dish.
From the Dish.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's about the most expensive, worst internet you can get.
Right, because I keep noticing that I use the internet, and then they'll send me something. Oh, this is a notification that your usage is like 10%.
That's typical on a satellite because they have so constrained. I only recommend satellite when there's no other choice.
Right.
I think the thing to do is go to dslreports.com. It's a website.
dslreports.com.
Mm-hmm. And enter in your zip code. They have reviews of internet service providers by geographic area.
Okay.
And see who gets the best reviews. And people are very, this is not owned or run by anybody. It's a really good site that will give you very, I think, objective reviews because it comes from the users.
Okay.
And I'm hoping that that they can provide you with some information in your neighborhood.
Okay, thanks, Leo.
Sure, Marilyn. I'm sorry. That sucks.
Oh, don't worry. Have a great day.
You deserve better. Thank you, Marilyn. Scott Wilkinson, the home theater guru, is here. He's the editor-in-chief of the AVS Forum at avsforum.com and also our host at the Home Theater Geeks podcast, twit.tv/HTG. Hi, Scott.
Yo, how you doing?
Joins us every week to talk home theater.
I do.
I have a call that maybe you would like to help us with.
Oh, sure. Absolutely.
Yeah, we're talking about, I'll let Darren phrase the question. He's on the line from Los Angeles. Hi, Darren. Leo Laporte with Scott Wilkinson.
How you doing, Leo?
I'm well. Welcome. What can we do for you?
Well, so, yeah, I've recently moved into a new house, and basically my living room is all glass. I have one wall available to really put a TV on, but it's going to be above our fireplace.
Oh!
So, yeah. So I want to make sure it doesn't go the same way as a Galaxy cell phone. And
so, yeah, there's two issues with fireplace. Of course, heat you're thinking of. But yeah. The reason Scott went, oh, is not the heat. It's because you're going to be looking up at your TV.
Yeah.
And you can just feel the pain in your neck soon.
I can, absolutely.
That's another reason. But really, in the room available, that is the only wall where I can possibly put a TV. At the minute, it's on a stand in the corner of the room.
I don't think a stand is a bad thing, is it?
No, I don't. I don't.
Spouse.
Where it's placed, it looks terrible, and light is coming through all the windows, and I can't even see my TV.
That's part of the problem, of course. A very bright room is a problem.
Really a problem, absolutely.
So what's your question, though, Darren? What would you like us...
I would like to know, one, if I'm okay to put the TV above the fireplace for, you know, that one day in January when I might actually have to light it.
You are in LA, after all.
I am. So, yeah, I'm not really worried about, you know, the fireplace being on all the time. I'm just worried if that one day I'm going to cook the TV. And two, because the room is so bright, I'm actually wondering, should I replace my TV with a new TV? And if so, should I go the OLED route and, you know, well, I'm cheap.
You should do what Lumpy in our chat room did. He said, oh, I just took the fireplace out and put a TV there.
Well, I'll tell you, I'll start with this. It's not a problem putting your TV on your fireplace in terms of heat. If it becomes a problem, you've got much bigger problems.
It can get warm above the fireplace, but it shouldn't get hot, right?
It shouldn't get hot, no. Yeah. And, you know, basically there should be very little heat transference from inside the fireplace, inside the flue, out through the wall to the TV. Now, if you have a radiator on your fireplace, a big piece of glass or a big piece of metal that radiates heat into the room, which is generally a good thing on a cold day or night, but it also can rise up and heat up the TV a little bit. It's really not a problem. The big problem, as Leo said, is craning your neck. Now, the solution to that problem is what's called an articulating TV mount.
An arm or something that you can...
Yeah. That basically, when you're not watching the TV, it's up there above the fireplace. But when you are watching it, you can bring it down. It actually comes out and down to the proper height for watching.
That's so interesting, yeah.
Are there any mounts that you'd recommend? Any brands?
Well, I don't know any brands particularly. I do know there are several out there. And I just now Googled articulating TV mount, and there's a ton of them. So you'd have to make sure that you get one that actually comes out and down. Some of them might come out and tilt one way or the other, but to actually come out and down is the important part. And I know there are at least two or three out there that are like that. And I don't have any experience with them directly, so I can't say, well, this one's good and that one's bad. But definitely they exist, and I would strongly recommend it. Now, in terms of the brightness in your room, you definitely don't want an OLED, because OLEDs don't get as bright as LCDs. Plus, they're more expensive, and you said you didn't want to spend a lot of money. So these are congruent goals here to get an LCD TV.
They're very bright. They're really designed for rooms where you can't darken them, right?
They're certainly much more appropriate for rooms where you can't darken, darken the room. Now, let me ask you this. How much do you watch during the day versus at night?
During the day, I don't really watch a lot because I'm at work, but my wife's at home and, our small child.
Oh, so she's going to watch a lot of TV.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, an LCD TV, is that what you have now, I assume?
We have an LCD at the moment, but that's another reason I wanted it out of the way and sort of up above the fireplace, because at the minute our 14-month-old keeps on going along.
Oh, yeah, that's not a bad idea.
Yeah.
Plus, he'll grow faster as his neck, because his neck is stretching all the time.
Yeah, like those Namibian women.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah. Darn those light, airy places with all the sunlight and natural light. I just hate that when that happens.
Yeah, don't you want to live in a man cave?
Forget windows. Just take the windows out, please.
Lock them all up.
How about curtains? How about, dark blackout curtains?
Well, it took me 20 years to get away from dark and gloomy and rough.
Are you from the UK?
I am originally, yeah.
Yeah, so you're enjoying the LA sunlight.
Yeah.
Well, there's nothing better than, walking along in January and you still see a girl at the beach in a bikini.
Right. Yep, exactly right.
Yeah.
So,
on the other hand, you have rain in the UK.
Yeah. Wouldn't that be nice?
Actually, yeah, I think we're going to get some today. I watch LCD TVs in lit rooms, brightly lit rooms. The worst thing is reflections. That's worse than the dim, the brightness versus dimness.
Yep. And with if you're
articulation will help that, because you can tilt the screen till you don't see reflections so much.
Right.
Okay.
And I don't know if your windows are directly opposite. Where
sounds like he's got three walls.
And probably is. In which case, you're going to have really bad problem with reflections.
How much is an articulating arm going to cost? You can go to Monoprice and get them. You don't have to spend a lot of money, right?
Yeah.
It's the installation that's a little tricky. The installation is if you're a handy person, you're going to want to put it in a stud, right? And if it's a chimney there, I don't know what you're going to have to.
Yeah, I'm not a builder, so I don't know exactly how to deal with that. But you do have to secure it.
You have to mount it in a way that it can hold a 50-pound TV set.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, they're lighter than they used to be, but they're still – that's a bit of weight. And, a good arm will be easy to manipulate. You don't want one that you have to,
really wrestle with.
Wrestle with, exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
That would be a good I'm trying to think of other solutions, but I think really that's the best one. Put it on an arm, and you can that way you could tilt the set till you don't get the reflections are minimized, even though you may never get rid of them, and you can move it a little bit closer to your eye line.
Exactly.
And out of the way of the kid.
Yeah.
Plus, with an articulating arm, you can move it. If you do have a fire in the fireplace, you can move it out away a little bit from the chimney, so it doesn't heat up.
At least for peace of mind.
If you read the manual or the specs for a set, all electronics for that matter have operating parameters for the temperature.
Right, a temperature range in which they're okay,
and you don't want to exceed that.
Right, exactly. But again, if your fireplace is properly designed, you're not going to exceed it when it's sitting
on
the fireplace.
It might get warmer, though, right?
It might get a little warmer, but yeah. It's not going to go outside that operating range.
Right. In L.A., fireplaces usually are pretty ineffective. they don't design them for warmth. It's more
use ours a couple times a year, around Christmas time.
Yeah. Hang it from the ceiling, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, that's it. Drop it down from the ceiling. I like it.
Thank you, Darren, and thank you, Scott. Scott Wilkinson is the host of the Home Theater Geeks podcast. You find it at twit.tv/HTG. He joins us each and every week to talk home theater and fills in for me when I'm out of town. Thank you.
Woo-hoo.
See you next time. We'll have more in just a minute.
So Battlecam was just asking me, the guy with the fireplace can buy a mount that hangs from the ceiling so you don't have to attach it to the fireplace. And I was just about to write, yeah, but that tends to be more complicated, probably more expensive. And again, if his fireplace is built properly, there's no need to worry about heat from the fireplace. And I don't care whether it's mounted on the ceiling or the fireplace. It's got to come down to eye height when you're watching it, or it's going to end up being really uncomfortable. And that's the point of that. Hey, AppleFan99, good to see you. Just been a lot of people talking about fireplaces. I have one. I don't know how I would mount a TV on it, because again, it's brick. Well, actually, mine isn't, but a lot of people's are, and I don't know what's the thing about that. UJ says, "How about a projector and a Stuart Halar retractable screen?" Halar. H-A-L-R, high ambient light rejecting. They're also known as the Phantom, just introduced at Cedia. That would be a great solution. Could be, as long as the projector were bright, even though it's an ambient light rejecting screen. With that much ambient light in the room, you would need a pretty bright projector, even with a high ambient light rejecting screen. And that's going to end up being a lot more expensive. I think he said he wanted to kind of keep it under certain budget.
Thank you, Scott.
My pleasure.
Top of the hour?
You bet.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888. Ask Leo. That's the phone number. 888-827-5536. Back to the phones we go. And Ed is on the line from Erland.
Hello, Leo.
Upland. Oh, sorry. It looked like an R. Upland. I know where that is. Hi, Ed.
Hi. Just down south of you along.
Yeah.
Anyway, I've got a quick question. Nothing so tech as the poor guy with trying to hang a TV. But but I hear you talking about the cover for your phone that you use on all of your smartphones.
Yeah.
That you go through all kinds of phones. But it sounded like you were saying it's like a skin rather than some cover that keeps coming off.
It's not a skin. No, it's not a skin. It's a cover. I use it for several reasons. One, it's cheap. It's under $10. It's a you've seen them. Every phone you can get can get one of these because they're so easy to make. It's basically, I don't know, about an eighth inch thick plastic, but it feels like rubber case that you pop the phone into. If you drop the phone, it's enough to protect it. It'll bounce. I usually get the clear one on phones that I like the look of the phone because I want to see the phone through it. But
oh, right, okay.
Yeah, and these are all over Amazon. Matone, Matone sells them. I always get mine from Ringke, R-I-N-G-K-E, just because they're cheap.
R-I-N-G-K-E?
And they always Ringke. Fit, yeah. And so it'll have cutouts or bumps for where the buttons and the holes are and stuff like that. Right. It's nothing fancy. It's not a fancy case. It's not a case anybody's going to say, oh, I like your case. More likely, it's going to be a case people aren't even going to know you have a case. But
it doesn't have to be. It's in my pocket most of the time.
Yeah, exactly. So. And it'll do the most important. Yeah, that's the other thing. I don't want a bulky case.
Right.
I can't slip in my pocket.
Right.
It's about as unbulky as you can get. There are thinner cases. In fact, on my Nexus 6P, my Google phone, I use a really thin plastic case that just snaps on. It's a shell. I would say that's called a shell case.
Oh, okay.
It's going to provide a little less protection against a drop.
Okay, is that going to be really slick where it slides off?
No, they're not slick. No, almost all of them, because they understand that's one of the big problems with phones these days, how slippery they are, is almost all of them are grippy. The ring keys are very grippy because it's like putting rubbers on your phone. It's like it's a grippy kind of texture. I think it's plastic, not rubber, but so you get the idea.
Yeah, okay. R-I-N-G-K-E.
Yeah, you'll see them on Amazon. The other reason I get it is because I usually get a phone the day it comes out, right? And they almost always are the first to market because all they need is one phone. They make a mold, and it's really quick and easy to do. There's no styling involved, right?
Right. Okay. Yep. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
It.
Great question. I'm glad to tell the world about my ring keys. These don't protect, by the way, the glass. Nothing protects the glass unless you get like an OtterBox with a lid. And then sometimes people put, and I just don't do this, a screen protector on. If you're going to do that, get the ones that are made of glass, not plastic. They're very, very thin glass. And the theory is, well, that glass will shatter, but you'll be able to peel it off and your Gorilla Glass underneath will be okay. It's interesting because this is a difficult materials science question. In general, there are a lot of different materials in the world. A material is either scratch resistant, very hard, or it'll scratch easily. The stuff that scratches is more shatterproof. So that's why they make eyeglasses usually out of plastic, but they kind of will scratch a little bit. And the stuff that is very scratch-proof, particularly when it comes to glass, tends to shatter easily. It's more brittle. It makes sense, doesn't it? And they're trying to find ways. But it's interesting because the newest Gorilla Glass, I think Apple never says, but I think it's what Apple's using on these new iPhone 7s, is a little bit more in the shatter-proof realm, which means they're a little scratchier than earlier versions. I don't like to put a cover on the phone. It's always a little strange when you touch the screen and there's something on it. On the other hand, having something to cover the back and most importantly, in my opinion, the corners, because when you drop it, most of the time it hits a corner and it dings a corner. And that's where it gets the most, you know, ugly little dings. If it hits the front, pretty much all bets are off. If you hit a pointed rock from more than 3 feet on your phone, you're gonna break the glass, I think, even if you've got one of those plastic or glass shields on. The Otter boxes are like boxes. They have lids that you close, and so you open it up to use the phone, and you have full access to the phone. But when you put the phone in your pocket or you're carrying it around, you have the lid closed, and that'll protect it from almost anything. Those things are very hard to... Ironically, my daughter, who has broken a few phones, she's 24, she's broken a few phones in her time. Finally, the last time I got her a phone, I said, okay, and here's the OtterBox that goes with it, and keep it on. And she did. And she's had the phone for more than a year, year and a half or two, I think. It's an iPhone 6, so yeah, a couple of years. And never broke it until she took off the OtterBox to clean it. You got it. The very first thing she does is drop it and break it. I don't know what to say. A good case, though, helps a lot. Even just a little rinky wrapper helps a lot. Mark, San Diego. Hi, Mark. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo. Really appreciate you and your show.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Hey, I just purchased a Dell Inspiron 7000 13-inch laptop three days ago, mm-hmm. and it started acting squirrely out of the box, and now it's really weird, and I did the Dell diagnostics on it and tells me that the hard drive is bad.
Yeah.
So my question for you is two parts. This obviously has shaken my confidence in Dell. Is this an enigma?
Return it and they'll replace it. It's all hard drives. There's a certain percentage of all manufacturers, all makes of hard drives. And by the way, Dell doesn't make them. They buy them probably from Hitachi or Seagate or Samsung or somebody. Most likely Samsung, ironically. But some percentage, 1/10 of 1%, 1/100 of 1%, fail. Infant mortality, we call it. They die out of the box. And the real test of a good company is not whether that happens. There's no company that can avoid that. It's whether they are quick and easy to get it replaced, because that's clearly a flaw in a shipping product that you just got. They should replace it right away, and it should be easy to do.
Okay, so the second part of the question, thanks for the first part, is since I've loaded a bunch of my personal data and info on there, what's the best way to clean it before I return
it? If you can't access it, if it really is dead, you're not going to be able to, and you just have to trust that the tech who gets it will. They're probably just going to destroy it. Usually, if a hard drive dies, there's no point in bringing it back, refurbishing or saving it. They're not that expensive. But yeah, it's kind of hard to do that if you can't access it, isn't it? You got a big magnet? Run a big magnet over it or drill a hole in it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Spinning drive, it'll be a Western Digital. SSD, it'll be a Samsung.
I can still talk?
You can still talk.
Yay! Well, that's great. Thank you. I really appreciate it. I just wanted to let everybody know that I did a little extra research here on this TV mount situation. And the company that that pops up first is called Mantle Mount, MANTELMOUNT, mantlemount.com. That's exactly what they make, is a TV mount that goes over the fireplace, but then comes out and swings down to put the TV closer to eye height, as you're supposed to have. I don't know quite how it would work. I'm looking at the website now. I'm not quite sure how it would work if you have a big wide mantle above your fireplace and the TV would go above that. But the mount actually is some arms that go like this. And I would imagine they'd only go so far if you've got a big fat mantle there above your fireplace. But in any event, Mantle Mount is the company that seems to specialize in this. So let's see. What else can I talk about here? AppleFan99 wanted to know about a TV mount for a Samsung 32-inch. I don't, other than this mantle mount, I haven't done a lot of research on TV wall mounts, I have to tell you, because I don't use them, because I get TVs in and out of here, so I always put them on a stand. But I suppose I should probably be looking at that. Battlecam makes a great point. The problem with mounting it to a fireplace, if the fireplace is brick, is that it's very difficult to get a secure hold into the brick. That's absolutely true. I don't know the solution to that one. Again, I'm not a builder, so if anybody's in a builder then. Valvey said something about, he didn't put my name in it, so I didn't see it before. See the article in today's New York Times on Billy Lynn's long halftime walk and HDR stuff. Yes, that Billy Lynn's long halftime walk, Ang Lee's new movie, was shown at the New York Film Festival. And it was shown in the way it was shot, which is 120 frames per second, 3D, 4K, high dynamic range. All the bells and whistles of today's technology. And it, the 11-minute clip I saw was phenomenal, really amazing. But you can't see it like that in commercial cinemas because there are no commercial cinema projectors with this that have the ability to do 120 frames per second, 4K, 3D, high dynamic range. So they had to bring in some special projectors to the film festival to play it that way. So I'm kind of disappointed in that. I think, as I recall, the Ang Lee's crew said that you'd either be able to see it in 60 frames per second at 4K or at 120 frames per second at 2K. And truth be told, I'd rather see it at 120 frames per second, 2K. Not that 60 frames wouldn't be good. It would. I'm sure it'll be very good. A lot of people will complain because it'll look like television rather than movies. And that's the big question about high frame rate. I myself am a big advocate and fan of high frame rate. I really like the way it looks. And so I want to see it at 120 frames per second, which is what Ang Lee shot it at. But then I'd have to, if I were to go to a commercial cinema and they were to play it that way, it would have to be at 2K resolution, which is fine with me. We've been looking at 2K resolution on 60-foot wide screens for years. and it looks fine at the right seating distance. I mean, if you're in the front row, sure, you'll probably see pixels. But at the right seating distance, there's no problem. You see perfectly beautiful, detailed images. So that will be my preference. I hope I can see it that way in L.A. That is the main thing there. Let's see, Battlecam. Just got the Roku Ultimate 4K HDR, but still don't have a TV. Waiting for Christmas sales on the Vizio M series. Okay, good. Good. I mean, the Vizio M series has full array backlighting, has HDR 10 and Dolby Vision. And the Roku Ultimate, I'm pretty sure, is HDR 10 only. I'd have to double check that. But I think it is, which will be fine. Now, Vizio just pushed out a major firmware update that improved its HDR 10 performance. So that'll be interesting. I'll look forward to seeing how well that worked. But it's that sounds like a winning combination to me. Although I have to tell you, if you can swing the extra dough for a P-Series, the reason I say that is the number of zones, the number of local dimming zones in the backlight is twice as high, at least, maybe four times as high on the P-Series as it is on the M. I think the M has 32. I think it's four times. The M has 32, as I recall, and the P has 128. And the more local dimming zones you have, the better, no question, because then you have more fine control over which parts of the image are dark and which parts are bright. So I would say if you can wait for the Christmas sales and get a P-Series, that's what I would recommend. Lawn Dog, give us a quick rundown of the top-of-the-line features available for TVs, high dynamic range and stuff like that. Yeah, it is very confusing to get stuff straight. That's true. I'm about to post an article what you need to consider when buying a TV and when shopping for a TV. And I'm going to be going over some of this. High dynamic range, I think, is really important. 4K is kind of inevitable. 3D, unimportant. That's about it. I mean, LCDs, I much prefer local dimming. Full array local dimming rather than edge lit, which leaves out most of the Samsung and Sony sets. Vizio is all backlit. LGs are also, I think, mostly edge lit. I don't really like LG LCD TVs anyway. Their OLEDs are another story. User 2013, what do you think of the new TV stands manufacturers are using? Little peg legs. TV stands that are provided by manufacturers were never really all that good. Some of them were okay. That can be a problem. I do, Apple Fan 99, I do have a case on my smartphone. I don't have it with me. It's, I think it's Neotech. It comes in, it puts it in a holster. And I like having a holster on my belt rather than having it in my pocket. That's just me.
Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy, Time Talk Computers, and the internet and home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smartwatches, cyber warfare, and all that jazz, 8888. Ask Leo is the number, 888-827-5536. That's toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada, and it's a Skype call away from everywhere else in the world. 8888-ASK-LEO, the website is techilabs.com. Now, I'm not flogging that because I make any money on it. We don't charge you. There's no sign up. It's wide open. But I do like it because I know that people are listening. And sometimes people say, oh, you say it so fast. I'm trying to write it down. Don't. You don't have to. You do not have to, because everything I say will be written. As it is said, so it shall be written, at techilabs.com by James DeRuvo, my scribe, my loyal scribe, and then Josh Windisch, my amanuensis, will take it over from there. He will add audio and video, so even if, you know, they'll have the text, but you can listen verbatim to the call after the fact. Somebody was saying, if I miss a show, what do I do? Well, techguylabs.com. We have podcasts of the show you can download, but you can also watch it on the web, and you can watch an individual question. And the website's broken down by show. Each show broken down into hours. There's 3 hours per show. And then each hour broken down into segments or calls, depending on you know, whether I'm just talking or whether there's a call in there too. TechGuyLabs.com. It is free. You can even add comments. So not only do you not have to write what I say down, write down what I say down. You don't have to, but if you're yelling at the radio, you can stop right now and just go to the website and say, no, I have a better idea. TechGuyLabs.com. Kevin is in Granada Hills, California. Hi, Kevin.
Hi, Leo. This is the second time I've called. I spoke to you last summer regarding organization and got you kind of excited. So I'm hoping organizational apps, I'm hoping I can do the same with
it. Did you ever find anything that you really suited? What was it?
Google Keep is fabulous.
Yeah, that was one of the suggestions. That's kind of the least intrusive. It's just, you know, a kind of place to dump stuff. But I use it all the time.
I think it's fabulous. Yeah. I use it, like I said, I use it every day.
Good.
I'm learning more and more about it. There's a lot that's showing up on CNET, on, you know, other
websites. Yeah, it has geofencing, so it can remind you when you get somewhere.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there's all sorts of useful things to it. And it's cross-platform, which I like. Apple's notes are similar, but they're only on Apple devices. So, yeah, good. I'm glad. And the reason I gave you a bunch of choices at that time is everybody's different in what they're looking for. Some people want a very rigid hierarchical system. Some people just want somewhere to write things down.
Yeah, and I looked at the one that you thought was, you know, you could build a rocket jet with, and boy, you were right on that. I mean, if you need that much organization, I mean, you're a genius, but I'm not in that category. Yes. I wanted to briefly ask you about your vacation. I hope you had a great time.
Lovely time. I did.
I'm glad.
Glad to be back, though. You know, the best vacation, you kind of
home.
It's great to come home. You feel like I'm complete, I did it, and now I'm home, and I like that, too.
Well, I'm glad you had a good, safe trip, and
thank you.
I'm sure the car is running still pretty fabulously.
Love the Tesla. News. It was still there when I got home. That was
good.
a good sign.
Important.
Yeah.
The question that I had for you today, I think, is a quick one because I heard you allude to it earlier, and that's password managers on that are available. And I know that there are a couple out there that I've used that I'm not too impressed with. And I wanted to hear your take on them. And I have so many, we all do now, with so many different websites and the security issues and cybercrime. And it's just impossible to keep in your head. And I'm finding that I'm actually photographing them on my phone, which is probably even more ridiculously insecure.
Well, the biggest problem with that is photos tend to be uploaded to servers.
Right,
so
exactly.
You're kind of passing your password around.
Stupid.
Well, it's not stupid.
Yeah, so that's what I'm asking now. It's a good password manager, can you recommend?
Yeah. I mean, I could give you the short answer, the long answer, and I would give you the short answer. But for everybody's benefit, let me give a little bit of a longer answer so we understand what we're talking about here. You're right. This having to remember passwords is a new phenomenon. When I was growing up, the only thing you ever had to remember was your school locker and maybe your bike lock combination, right? That was it. And even then, that was a problem. You know, maybe you'd write it on a piece of paper. But now, every website you go to has a password. The temptation, and I would say 90% of the people listening do this, is to make up a password that's easy to remember, that some combination of your children's initials and your birthday, that kind of thing.
Right.
And then not vary it, but just use it everywhere.
Right.
And so there's two things wrong with that. First, a password like that is eminently guessable. And you would be amazed at the capabilities bad guys have to figure out passwords. So that's problem number one. Problem two is if you use the same password on multiple sites, if any site gets compromised, which they almost, you know, I mean, it happens all the time. I mean, look at the latest. Yahoo, half a billion passwords leaked out. Because they were hacked, and they'd been hacked 4 years ago, so they've been floating around all the time. Now, if you used your Yahoo password in more than one place, you're really in trouble because all of those places are now compromised.
Right.
So the best way to make a password is to have it be long and strong, and it's strong by being random. And this is a problem because, of course, a long random password, which is a combination of upper and lowercase letters, numbers, and punctuation symbols, is eminently unmemorable. It's like you'll never remember it. And that's the point.
Yeah.
In fact, you could almost say the harder a password is to remember, the better the password is. So what we're looking for is a way to make these long, strong passwords and to keep them safe. Now, the downside to this is wherever you keep your passwords is a single point of failure. If a bad guy gets that, oh, now you're in as much trouble as Yahoo if you use the same password everywhere. So, I don't see anything wrong with, by the way, having a notebook in your house. If the only time you ever need your password is when you're sitting in front of your computer at home, keep a notebook next to the computer. And the only way that that would ever be compromised is somebody broke in and stole it.
Mm-hmm.
And you'd probably know that that had happened. So that's what a lot of people who are scared off by password managers, the idea of using software to do this, should do that. Don't put them on Post-it notes. Just have a notebook. It's okay if you want to write passwords on the front of it. Put it in a drawer. Don't leave it lying out. Put it somewhere where it's not immediately obvious. Chances are, even if you're broken into, no bad guy's looking for your password notebook. They're just going to steal the stuff they can sell on the street easily. And so that isn't a bad way to do it, despite appearances. That's not how I do it, because I have one little problem for that, which is I use passwords at home, at work, on my phone. And most people are like this now. We have many computers. We need to access our password everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't want to have a little notebook you carry around. That's going to get lost, and then you're in trouble. So for that, we can use software, and that's what you were talking about. Now we're catching up finally to your question, which is what password manager is the best. I use LastPass at LastPass.com. It's completely cross-platform. It's very affordable. It's $1 a month if you use the pro version. Works on Android, iOS, Mac, Windows. It is well designed in the sense that the guy who created it knew what he was doing, and it's well designed. Another very good one is 1Password. Have you tried either of those?
No, I haven't.
Okay, I would say just try LastPass. It takes a little getting used to. You want LastPass to both generate and store your passwords. On Android, LastPass will auto-fill in passwords on the phone. It'll do that on your desktop, Chrome, Safari, Internet Explorer. There's plugins for all three. That's kind of everything a password manager should be. And really importantly, because again, single point of failure, they do a very good job of keeping your passwords safe. I'll talk about why 1Password might be better when we come back. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. The tech guy. So password manager is a favorite pet topic of mine, only because it's a really big part of keeping yourself safe online is to use good, strong passwords. And if you do, then you'll need some way to remember them. You do need 1Password that you can memorize. That's the last one you have to memorize is what? Yeah, the password to your password manager, your vault. So you need a way of creating a password that is long and looks random, but isn't in fact random, because you're generating it in some way that you can recreate. So I've mentioned a couple of ways of doing this. You could have, if you're a golfer, you could have the initials of everybody who's won the Masters for the last 10 years. And if they, and then followed by their score. Okay, maybe that's not so easy. How about this one? If you're a political junkie, the last 10 presidents of the United States, the initials, let's just use the last initial. Let's capitalize it if it's a Republican, lowercase if he's a Democrat, and then follow it because that's just letters in uppercase and lower. We want to get some, if we can, numbers and punctuation in there. Maybe follow it by the number of years served. And then if it's Gerald Ford or LBJ, you can use a fraction. You get the idea. Whatever it is. Actually, I tend to use song lyrics. So pick a song that you love and just use the initials of the first letter word and maybe add punctuation or upper and lower case in some rule that you understand. And if you really want to make it good, and by the way, we know that longer is always better. You know, 8 is bad compared to 20. So longer makes it much harder to crack. And then if you really want to make it hard, I do this. You want to add a number, either your childhood zip code or your childhood phone number. a phone number is good because you probably had that burned into your memory by your parents, right? But it's highly unlikely anybody else would have any way of figuring out what it is. Even if they did, by the way, they still don't have your full password because you have that other stuff on there too, all the presidents. So do the presidents, the years, and then add your childhood phone number. Now you've got a pretty good password that you can recreate. You don't have to memorize it, although after you type it a few times, you will have it memorized, but you can recreate it. So that's what you need. You need some sort of mnemonic to create the password. Now, I mentioned that there is perhaps one advantage 1Password has over LastPass. Both of them are very good. Both of them are totally cross-platform. LastPass is less expensive, but it's a renewable, right? So ongoing subscription. 1Password you pay once. The point of single point of failure is the difference. In order for password systems to work on at home and at work and on your phone, there needs to be a central place to store it that you can get access to. In the case of LastPass, that's their servers. And you could see why that's risky, because if somebody were to crack LastPass's servers, they'd be able to access your password vault. Now, LastPass handles it by encrypting your password vault with strong encryption. So it's somewhat preventative, but the problem is if a bad guy gets your password vault, he can beat on it at his leisure and try to crack it. And this is where the bad guys are so good. They use something called brute force. They guess, and they guess because they're using powerful computers to do this very, very, very rapidly. And they go through all the obvious stuff first, birth dates, initials, that kind of thing they can do very quickly. Common words in the dictionary, you know, they have large dictionary files with hundreds of thousands of words, and they try them all. And because they're using computers, if they have access to your password file, they can do that very quickly. It's harder to do if they're trying, you know, like let's say they're trying to get into your Twitter account. Well, Twitter will rate limit their ability to guess passwords. So they can't do it very fast, you know. Type a password, Twitter thinks about it, comes back, says no. Type another password, Twitter thinks about it, comes back, says no. You can't do a million passwords a minute that way. But you can if they have your blob, if they have your vault. So that's why having your password vault somewhere accessible and hackable is risky. 1Password will do that if you want. They'll store it for you, but they'll also let you manage it, which means you can have your password vault somewhere on your server, or maybe not have it on the internet accessible at all. You can control your password vault, and so it eliminates that single point of failure as a problem, or at least makes it more difficult. People are much less likely to be able to get your password vault from your personal server than from, you know, LastPass. Everybody's there. So there's a little advantage to 1Password. There are other issues with 1Password. They've in the past used a password vault system that wasn't so secure. They've changed that. They use now the Agile keychain, which is a better way to go. Now we're getting to the weeds, pretty technical stuff. But either one I think would be good. And as I said, if you only use one, like my mom really doesn't, she has a phone, but she doesn't leave the house. She doesn't need passwords on the phone. She needs passwords on her computer, on her iPad. So I've told her it's fine to make a notebook. She uses 1Pass or LastPass. She likes it. So, but it would be fine if that's the case. If you don't need it everywhere, just where you're sitting, then you can have a notebook. That's fine. If you want to be really sneaky, write everything backwards. No one will ever know. No one will ever know. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. I'm glad you asked, Kevin, because I think that that's a very important subject. Both 1Password and LastPass will also do a security checkup, for instance. They'll go through your passwords and say, well, you've duplicated this password on 15 sites. Maybe you would like to change it. Both of them have easy kind of one-touch password changing mechanisms. For instance, if you have a Yahoo account, now would be a really good time to change that password. In fact, turn on two-factor. That's the other thing that can really make a difference. A single password is a real vulnerability. Because if somebody can guess that password, that's it. Really, the base problem here is authentication, proving you are who you say you are. You want to make it hard for anybody to say that they're you, right? Only you are you. So how do we authenticate? Well, there's three ways. One, biometrics, fingerprint, iris scan, that kind of thing. Something that we call that something you are, your physicality. Two, something you know. That's a password. It's in your head. So something you know, something you are. And then the third one's interesting. It's something you have. And that could be your phone, your smartphone. Second factor authentication sends you a special six-digit number that's good only for 30 seconds to your phone. So the bad guy would have to have your knowledge plus your phone, and that makes it that much harder. So turn a lot of sites now let you do this. Google does, Facebook, Twitter, even Yahoo. Turn that on. That's really good stuff. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Johnny Jet, proud papa. How was it? First time you traveled away from your wife and baby.
First time in 2 months. It was weird getting on a plane.
You know, I saw your Instagram, though. It's so cute. The flight attendant recognized you, said, "Are you Johnny Jet?" And you said, "Yes, ma'am." And she came and brought you a little stuffed animal for Jack. She said, "Here, this is for Jack."
It was amazing. I mean, it's not every day that the flight attendants recognize me. And I thought I was getting punked when she first came up. I was like, "Where are the cameras?" And then she was like, "I've been following you for years." And she's like, "What you wrote about Jack was amazing." And she goes, "I have a present for him." And she came back and gave this little aviator Snoopy, which was, you know, it just melted my heart. So and then cute. The other flight attendant came up and said, "I knew I recognized you." And I was like, "Oh my God." I was like, "Where are the cameras?"
You're a celeb, babe. No. Oh, yeah, you are. You're rapidly becoming the best-known travel guy in the world, which is you deserve. Everybody should follow you at johnnyjet.com. You've got a free travel newsletter there that's awesome. Johnny's also on Twitter and Instagram at johnnyjet. Yes. And every week he joins us with a travel website and a travel app. What do you have for us today?
I have a couple, but I assume in the beginning of the show you talked about the Galaxy Note 7 being banned.
Yes.
Okay, I want to make sure you did. So let's reiterate it.
No, it's worth saying the Federal Transportation Administration says you may not carry a Note 7 on any plane in the United States as of noon today.
Including shipping, cargo, in a bag, anything.
But they really don't want you to check it because
you can't check a bag.
You could blow up the plane.
Yeah, so, I mean, this is another thing to worry about.
And they say, we were reading the regulations together on the show this morning, and they say if the flight attendant discovers you have a Note 7, they're going to force you to turn it off, disable anything that might turn it on again, like an alarm clock, and you may not put it in the seat back or above you. You have to keep it in your pocket.
Well,
that's your punishment.
I also heard they're going to take it away from you, and you can face fines,
right,
and arrest,
right.
It's going to be interesting how they police it. I flew yesterday from San Francisco back down to LA, and you know they made the announcement. You know, please make sure you turn off all Galaxy Note 7s. This is before the mandate came out.
This is just silly at this point. I really think we've kind of gone overboard here.
Yeah, but I feel bad for the flight attendants how they're going to police it.
Yeah. Well.
But, you know, then I look at the passenger across the aisle from me. He has a Galaxy. I didn't know if it was a Note 7. I don't think so. But I'm like, what?
You can kind of tell if it's a Note.
Right.
They're distinctive. I've been carrying my S7, which was the predecessor to the Note, and I've never had any problems with it. And it's a great phone.
Right.
I don't know. It's sad. You know, I don't understand what Samsung did. And they don't. Apparently, they don't either. That's the scary thing.
Big time.
They can't figure it out.
It's big time.
What?
But enough of that. So let's talk about, you know, how to find real hotel photos. So a lot of times when you're planning a vacation, you're looking online, you know, the hotel websites have, you know, most of them are fake photos, totally glossy. So, you know, I always advise people before you book your hotel, make sure that it really is beachfront. So you do that by going onto Google Maps, putting in the address and make sure
that's
it's
a good
you
idea.
Know,
yeah.
'Cause beachfront could mean across the street from a major beach, right. Which I know a lot do.
Cross the highway.
You can. It's still beachfront.
It's an 8-lane highway, but we're still on the beach.
So you always look at Google Maps. You can also look there for the real photos. But there's an app, a new app that just came out. It's Oyster. They've had a website for a long time, oyster.com. I think they're owned by TripAdvisor and Expedia. It's free. It's on the iOS and Android. But what these guys do, what I like about them is that they have users upload real photos from hotels all around the world.
Nice.
And you can see what they are. And, you know, they actually don't have user generated reviews. It's expert reviews.
Look at this. This is the Central Palace. I don't know where this is. The hotel, it's in Sicily. The picture of the hotel posts compared to the actual room.
That's what I love.
Wow.
It's a big difference.
Wow. Okay. So that's good. I like that. You know, the other thing that they frequently do, cruise lines are the worst for this, but real estate agents do it too. They'll use a wide angle lens. It makes everything look a lot bigger than it really is.
For sure.
You know, like a 100 square foot room looks like it's huge. Then you get there and you go,
what?
What?
Yeah.
What?
So I totally recommend this. And you know, and look around. You can also hopefully you follow other travel bloggers like myself who do, you know, post photos in real time as well on social media. And there's plenty of us around now. So there's a whole list you can do. I actually have a list on my Twitter feed.
This is actually hysterical when you look at the published photo versus the actual. It's awesome.
Right.
It's
but hysterical. In fairness, some of the actual photos, you know, those guys aren't very good photographers, some of them. And also, it's dark.
Right.
You know, they could be taking it, you know, in the evening instead of when it's bright. So in fairness to some of the hotels, but the majority, I would definitely just cross.
Let's just put it this way. Beaches are never crowded in the hotel picture, ever. Pools are always empty and sparkling blue.
Right.
Yeah.
Without a doubt.
Yeah.
Okay, so. Now we got that. So also, have you heard of the website called Meal Train?
No.
It's not so much a travel website, but it's for travelers who have either loved ones or who are either sick or had a baby like I did. And, you know, they have a life-changing event and they can't get their self organized. So if they want to help their friends and family, you go to this website and you can organize a meal plan for other people, other friends to drop off.
I love this.
It's a great idea, especially for people who are really going through a tough time. You can set up what their allergies are, what kind of foods they like, what times people should drop stuff off.
This is the best. I'm telling you, if you've had a bereavement or an illness, the best thing your friends and family can do for you, or you have a new baby, is to bring you a nice meal. Now, they don't make the meal. They just help you organize it.
Exactly. You can list your favorite restaurants, and so your friends can order out from there, have it delivered.
This is great.
It just makes it more organized, especially for the people who are really going through tough times.
Yeah.
You know, I had, you know, a couple of my friends came up. Actually, the person who mentioned this website, Jen Leo, she's the one who told me about it, and she also brought us a meal right after the Jack was born. And
it's the best thing you can do for people, I tell you.
It makes a big difference.
Yeah.
It really does.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I highly recommend it. I haven't used it, but I heard good things about it, and there's other competitor sites like that. The point is just, you know, there's ways to help your friends and family who, even when you're not around the corner, you can organize stuff.
I love
you don't
that.
Have to get on a plane
if you
don't need to.
Yeah. Yeah. Very nice. So Jack and Natalie, your wife and your son, they're doing good. They're
actually out on their, my mother-in-law's in town and my sister-in-law.
Are they taking a little walk in the baby carriage?
Yes, they are. They're out shopping around and taking Jack out.
I bet you have all the gadgets, right? You have all the latest, greatest strollers.
You do.
Baby
we have the Stokke traveler stroller. Have you heard of Stokke?
No.
It's Scandinavian. Natalie found it.
Of course, the best stuff Scandinavian. Yeah, yeah.
It's really awesome. You just pop it in. You can pop it on the stroller. It has green if everything's okay. It's
funny, even since my kids 20 years ago were babies, this stuff has changed amazingly. And I thought back then, wow, we really got high tech.
Yeah. And also, you know, I learned by the way, taking those classes that car seats, don't ever buy one online because if you've ever been in an accident, that car seat is no longer good. And people don't tell you that when they buy it online.
Right.
So only take a car seat from a loved one that you know who has not been in one. And car seats are always changing. The rules are changing.
Yep.
So do your research on that.
We're going to have to get Johnny to do – we're going to call him Johnny Baby Gadget.
I'm going to be a daddy blogger, and I'm proud of it.
That's awesome. JohnnyJet.com. John, great to talk to you. Glad you're back home.
Thank you.
And we'll talk again next week. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More of your calls still to come. Stay here. I got my invitation to IT Pro TV's grand opening. This is so cool. IT Pro TV is kind of like Twit for IT professionals. I think that's really the best way to describe it. They have a 24/7 streaming, or you can even download it, of IT content, thousands of hours covering all the best, most important certs, CompTIA, MCSA, CCNA, all of that stuff. They are just, they've just built a new studio in Gainesville. They already have two studios. They built, they have five, a new facility with five, count them, five studios. This is the invitation of the grand opening. Look at this. That means they're doing 30 hours of content a week. They're going to soon, they're going to be doing many more hours of content. You can choose from it. You can watch it live. You can watch it on your Chromecast, your Roku, your Amazon Fire TV, your Apple TV, your PC. Yeah, they have an Apple TV app. Isn't that awesome? And now, the sky's the limit. So if you're trying to get into IT and you've looked at technical schools and you saw how expensive they are, even buying the study guides can cost you hundreds and hundreds of dollars, you got to check out IT Pro TV. Even if you're currently working as an IT professional, there's no better way to polish your skills, to get better. The demand for highly trained, experienced IT professionals is through the roof. You know one area that's great? Security. They have courses in crypto, and they have the Certified Ethical Hacker courses. You can get a cert for that. They're also teaching this October, they're teaching CCNA routing and switching and installation, storage, and computing with Server 2016. The brand new server just came out. They have Windows Operating Fundamentals, Red Hat Linux, networking with Server 2016, Macintosh management, on and on and on. Here's the deal. Go to itpro.tv/techguy. ITPRO dot, I'm typing it out as I speak, TV/techguy. And you will see all that IT Pro TV has to offer. I mean, it is phenomenal. These guys, they kind of started with us a few years ago, and they've grown and grown and grown. I'm just so proud of them. Now they've got that new studio. If you're in the Tampa, Jacksonville, Orlando area, don't miss their grand opening. You can actually go if you'd like. October 27th, 6 to 8 p.m. I'll be there. Studio tours, food, drink, live music. You can check it out. IT Pro TV all over the world is teaching people how to become IT professionals. Now, normally, we're talking, there's a free tier, by the way, you can watch live, Monday through Friday, 9 to 5. But there's also the normal subscription, which is $57 a month, or you get 2 months free if you subscribe for a year. But if you go to itpro.tv/techguy, you can try it free for a week, see what it would be like to have a full, you know, premier subscription. And if you decide to buy 30% off for the life of the account forever, they've got courses in every possible topic. They even have the step-by-step virtual machine labs. They have the practice exams, all part of your subscription. You can learn what you need. You can polish up your skills. And it's fun. I mean, it's really fun. itpro.tv/techguy. Use that URL. That way you'll get that special 7-day trial, but you'll also let them know you saw this in the Tech Guy. And we appreciate their support of the Tech Guy show, their support of Twit in general. They're huge fans. If you go down on the website, you'll see pictures of Tim and Don hanging out at Twit. They're funny guys. I'm looking forward to seeing them in Gainesville. itpro.tv/techguy. And you'll save 30% off with the offer code TG30. TG30. IT Pro TV. And again, October 27th, I'll see you all in Gainesville. You guys beat me every time. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo. Greg in Valley Center, California is the next call. Hi, Greg.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
Good. I have a question about a Samsung S7 phone that I've had for a while, and I put an app on there to download music with, and I've downloaded plenty of music, and then all of a sudden now it says, when I download it, and it says that it's been downloaded, it says invalid file.
Oh. Where are you downloading the music from?
It's from the app called SoundCloud.
Oh, SoundCloud, yeah. So SoundCloud, those are MP3s. Those shouldn't be impossible to play.
Yeah, and I've done it for a year. I mean, on my other Galaxy S5 for a year and a half or so, and then when I got this for about a year, and then all of a sudden, nothing.
Huh. So it's not like the files got they were the same exact file was playable, and all of a sudden it says I can't play it.
Yeah.
Interesting. Not sure. Are you using an SD card? Are you downloading to the SD card?
It's not downloading to the SD card, but I have one.
Yeah. I would try. You can get a file manager. Actually, Samsung ships a kind of primitive one, but you can also download something like Astro or ES files, a file manager that'll let you move that file to a folder on your SD card. Now, remember, the folder name will have to be music. There's some specific folder naming for the Samsung to see it. But try moving that same file to the SD card. See if you can play it from there. Do you play it back with the SoundCloud app?
Yeah. Well, yeah. I have actually, no, it isn't. It's a MP3 player I use.
Uh-huh. I'm wondering, you know, SoundCloud does let you download in other formats. Maybe it's in a format the MP3 player doesn't like. Can you play it back in the SoundCloud app?
Yeah, I can play it back in the SoundCloud app.
So it works in the SoundCloud app, but not the MP3 player?
Oh, no.
Oh, streaming in the SoundCloud app. But, I mean, can you play the downloaded file in the SoundCloud app?
So. The stuff that I already have, I can play in either one. But all of a sudden now, when I've downloaded...
Stuff.
Yeah, the new stuff, it new shows stuff. That it's downloaded. Like it'll say, download complete. And I'll go, great. And I'll go to look at it, and it says, no minutes. And then when I push it, it says, invalid file.
So you haven't filled up your internal storage, have you?
No.
That'd be one possibility. Okay, so in other words, what's happened is these files are not completely downloaded because you only have zero-length files there.
Yeah, well, it says download complete, but then it says 0 minutes.
Yeah.
For it. It's yeah. Obviously nothing fun.
So it sounds like the file is corrupted. It's damaged in some form or fashion. First of all, check the settings. You're downloading it within SoundCloud, right? The SoundCloud app.
Yes.
Check the settings. Make sure, because SoundCloud does have other formats. Make sure you're continuing to download it in the same format you were before.
Okay.
I wonder, SoundCloud didn't add copy protection. I don't think so, but maybe they did.
Yeah, I was wondering if they've done some update or something.
Do you... Josh in our chat room says, yeah, there's DRM in it, and if your license is expired, it'll show 0 minutes. You're a SoundCloud premium subscriber? Are you paying for it?
No, I'm just a freebie.
And it worked in the past?
Yeah. I mean, what happened was about a couple months ago, I downloaded 7 songs, and 2 of them went through, but 5, the other 5.
Those are just failed downloads. I've had that happen as well. And it says completed, but it didn't really get a file.
Yeah, but ever since then, I haven't been able to get anything.
Yeah, interesting. Well, there's a couple possibilities. I would first test this theory get a file manager first of all and examine the file. See if it's really nothing in that file. If it's 0 bytes, then it's a bad download of some kind.
Okay.
But the file manager will show its true size. If it's a you know a size that you would expect, 11 megabytes or something, if you know a reasonable size, typically it's 11 megabytes a minute. So something like, what is it? No, megabyte a minute for a compressed MP3. So you should have a few megabyte size file. If you see a file there, it's not really 0 bytes, then move it. See if you can play it. You know, and an empty file will be not necessarily zero. It'll open up a block, so it'll be 4K. But 4K is not big enough to hold any music, 4 kilobytes. So there's something going on. Either the download's failing, there's copy protection. Maybe you're not right. It's not writing to the proper, something's, you know, wrong. If you can make SoundCloud save to your SD card, I would do that. That's why you want an SD card. I was putting
Then that's what I'll do.
Maybe it'll work better.
All right. Well, then I'll try some of this and I'll get back with
good
you.
Luck.
Let you know.
Yeah, let me know. Yeah. I mean, this is not unusual. I've had this happen where your phone thinks it's on Wi-Fi, but it's a poor connection. It thinks it's completed it, but it hasn't. It's just a bad download. Maybe I'll have to look into SoundCloud. I actually have a subscription to SoundCloud. I love SoundCloud. They have a lot of interesting stuff on there. But it might be that they do use. I don't really remember copy protection. Maybe you had a trial account at SoundCloud, and then the trial expired, or maybe you had paid for it and forgot. But then the payment ran out. The subscription ran out. I'm not sure. Somebody knows. There's a couple ways to do it. Call me 8888-ASK-LEO or go to our website, techguylabs.com, and add your comments. Those are always much appreciated. To Covina we go. Nick is on the line. Hi, Nick.
Hello. How are you, Leo?
I'm great. Run to the phone. I do the same thing. If I'm on hold, put it on a speakerphone, go about my business.
Yes. Okay. First of all, thanks for keeping Leo.am.
Oh, you're welcome. I registered that ages ago. What does that lead to? I don't even know.
To your main webpage.
Oh, good.
Your main website.
All right, Leo.am. That's clever of me.
Yes, and it's a lot faster to type, so I'll get there real quick.
Yeah, I like short URLs. Really, that still works, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Wow, it does. It goes right to the Tech Guy Labs. You know, why am I saying techguylabs.com? I'll just start saying leo.am.
There you go.
That's registered through the Armenian Nick.
Oh,
yeah.
Armenian.
That's probably why I don't give it out, is because I don't even remember how I registered it. At some point, I'm going to have to pay a bill. What can I do for you?
Okay, I'm looking for a solution to find the best hot spot for home use. So if I've cut the cord, if I decide to go, I want to get a hot spot. What do you recommend?
So you want to use your cellular network for your internet?
Well, not necessarily my phone, but maybe like...
Yeah, but if you're not paying for an internet service provider and you're using the wireless in the air, the cell, that means you're going to make a deal with Verizon, AT&T, T-Mobile, Sprint, one of the carriers. You have to check with them on their site because they sell the hotspot, and you want to get a special home deal, because if you were using your phone, as you know, it ends up being costly because they have bandwidth caps. It gets more expensive as you use. If you used a typical amount that you would use as a home internet connection, it could really be pricey. But all the carriers now recognize that this is a very good way to get internet wirelessly through the cell network, especially if you're in an urban area like Covina. But so check with your carrier because they'll have the hotspot you need. You have to get it from them. Because believe it or not, it has a SIM card and everything, just like your phone does. And you want to make sure you negotiate a good price for a home user. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Oh, I should mention the Karma Go. You're right, Dr. Mom. That's another one, Nick, you could use. Is the Karma Go. I use that. That's basically a little card, but it gets its internet connectivity from Sprint via a company called Karma. And let me see. I think it's getkarma.com. And the idea is really good. It's what I use if I'm, in the car or something like that. It's not getkarma.com. I'll just Google Karma Go. That'll probably work. Yourkarma.com.
Oh,
yourkarma.com.
Okay.
And what this does is this little card, and you pay as you go. Now, it's not cheap. And that's the problem with all 3G and LTE data, but it's cheaper than the phone companies usually. And it does use Sprint, so you're going to want to make sure you're in an area where Sprint works well.
Okay.
But the data pricing is a little pricey. So 5 gigs are $40, 10 gigs, $75, 20 gigs, $140, 50 gigs, their biggest plan is $150. So that's not cheap.
Okay.
But you can also do, that's if you buy the subscription. You can also do pay as you go, which is $15 a gigabyte, which isn't too bad. And then you just pay for what you use.
Okay. Yeah, because I have like two college students, and then they like to stream movies.
They're going to cost you a pretty penny.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's almost always better to use a landline internet service provider if you're going to use that much data.
Mm-hmm. I'm trying to decide.
Yeah, you'll get a better price if you go to your cable or your phone company. Because it's just so much, if you have college kids streaming YouTube and Netflix, you're talking, you know, between 30 and 200 gigabytes a month easy.
Mm-hmm.
So this would be outrageously expensive.
Okay, yeah, so it looks like I might have to...
Yeah, I'd bite the bullet and get a land provider.
Yes, at least that part.
Yeah. Okay.
All right, great. Thank you so much.
Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Yeah, and thank you, Dr. Mom, for reminding me about karma. YourKarma.com. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here. I am the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smartwatches, and all that jazz. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number, 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. We've been debating in the chat room where you should buy your PC components like video cards and CPUs and memory cards. And the reason it came up is Newegg, which is the geek's favorite, has been for years, was essentially acquired by a Chinese company. They have 52% controlling interest in Newegg, which is a California company, was a California company. The debate is over, well, Newegg or Amazon, which is better, versus maybe something like B&H Photo. But the interesting thing, and this is what Lou M.M. pointed out in our chat room, is that all of them run crawlers these days. They're constantly checking. It's so interesting. This is a little known but very powerful technology going on behind the scenes on the internet. They're constantly monitoring other sites and maintaining a price near them. And I was talking to somebody who has a product made in China with their name on it that they sell on Amazon. And he noted that all of a sudden Amazon was offering that product with his name on it for less than he was offering. That in effect, they were intercepting, because he was selling on it, he was using Amazon's fulfillment, so they were intercepting it and selling it for less than he could sell it for. And what it is his computer programs that are constantly running on Amazon, and I presume Newegg and B&H, constantly going out there, checking prices, constantly manipulating prices. And that's why when you go to Amazon three times in a single day, you may note three different prices for the same thing, all within a few bucks of each other, but sometimes there's significant differences. Everybody does this now. You get on an airplane. If you could do this, I would love to do this sometime. And just give everybody on the airplane a piece of paper. Say, would you write, at least in your section, let's do, would you write down on this piece of paper how much you paid for this ticket? And then we compare it. No two people will have the same price. And there may be significant differences between the highest and the lowest. And it's because airlines do exactly the same thing. They use computers to constantly massage the prices as we get closer to, for instance, the flight. A seat that's empty is a complete money loser, so they're going to sell it even if it's a considerable discount. They may sell it a few hours ahead of time for, you know, a third the cost just because they want somebody in that seat. That's why we rarely see a plane fly without a full complement these days. It's all thanks to this sophisticated technology that's working all the time. So I wonder if the original conversation was, oh, I don't buy a Newegg because there's always somewhere less expensive. Well, I wonder if that's the case. I think it's difficult nowadays for us to price shop. We don't move as fast as these bots around the web trying to get prices, trying to undercut each other. It's really timing. You know what we need? We need our own bots. We need buy-in bots. It'll go out there and do all that. Constantly monitor, ping you when the price drops suddenly, as it does sometimes. Maybe you've got a technique. 8888 Ask Leo. Moving on to Jim in Temecula, California. Hi, Jim. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo. How you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
I've been a long-time listener of yours. In fact, ever since you took over KFI, and they surprised us that day that you came on those years ago.
Surprise, surprise, surprise. Back in 2004, January 4th.
I was happy you did, too.
I was, too.
You helped me all these years.
I was very grateful. Thanks to Robin Bertolucci at KFI for having the good sense to hire me.
Yeah, and you've been a great help all these years. I'm kind of a tech guy at my school, and I think it's
nice.
You.
Thank you.
Twit University.
Thank you.
Well, I got a problem now because I'm also the kind of tech guy for my dad, my brother, and I, but I do it through TeamViewer 100 miles away.
That's a great solution, isn't it? You can access their computer and fix it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's really good. It works a lot better now. I've been using it for about 5 years.
Nice.
Well, he's got an issue. He doesn't mind reimaging his Windows 10 three times a year to get rid of malware. And he doesn't mind, but I do.
How often?
3 times a year.
Holy cow. So he's just saying, I know malware happens. I'm just going to start over 3 times a year.
Yeah. Now, he's elderly, and it's kind of hard to see things. So every once in a while, he'll click on those email attachments.
Oh, and they're just lying in wait, aren't they?
Yeah, they're really appealing, you know. Click me. But and he's had the issue where they've had him call him, take over his machine.
Oh, man. I was in the car the other day driving along, and the guy said, are you in front of your computer right now? And I said, yeah. Is it a Windows? I can tell it's a Windows machine. We're monitoring you right now. Oh, yeah? Really?
And you could probably drag him along.
Well, I thought about that, and then I thought, no. And I, you know what I did, and I feel pretty good about it. I said, my friend, shame on you. What would your mother say if she knew that you were calling people to scam them? And he hung up on me. But I hope that maybe, you know, if we all did that, just a little nudge towards the light side, maybe they'd go, yeah, shame on me. What am I doing this for? That's terrible.
Just spoken to those guys that did that to my dad because, you know, it takes a weekend.
Just say shame on you, my friend.
Yeah.
Is this what your mother brought you up to do?
Right.
Right?
Well, I'd like some help with you now is if you could let me know if you think that a Chrome OS PC would
yes.
be a solution for you.
Oh, yes. Please, Dad. Stop the insanity. You know, remember, we all bought Windows PCs because that was the default. That was the choice. I mean, the most choice you had was Windows or Mac. And we had to buy general purpose computers because that's all you could buy. But they're overly complex. You can see right now the problem. And I bet your dad's not doing anything but surfing an email.
And saving the Dropbox.
And saving the Dropbox, fine.
Office 365.
Ah, not so fine. So you can't run Windows apps on a Chromebook. You can only run Chrome and Android apps. Now, there are Office apps on Android. There is also, of course, Office for the web, which works very well on a Chromebook. And unless your dad is like writing movie scripts, it'd probably have all the features he needs.
I don't think he's locked into 365 necessarily. He could probably use Google Docs.
Well, and that's kind of what Google would like you to do, certainly, yeah.
Right.
The thing about a Chromebook, the only catch is you have to be online to really use it effectively.
Which he always is.
Right,
is
most
LA,
of us are.
Never
yeah. There's a new Chromebook just coming out from Samsung. It's a little pricey. It's $500.
Now, here's the thing, though. I don't think – I was looking for a 22-inch or a larger screen.
Oh, yeah, yeah. They make them. They're called Chrome Boxes.
Uh-huh.
So Chrome Box, there's a couple of ways to do it. So they have all-in-ones. Acer and others make those. And they also have Chrome Boxes, which look like Mac Minis. They're just little small computers that you hook up to a large display. You can have any size you want.
Use touchscreen?
If you buy a touchscreen display, yeah.
Well, because he uses a magnifying glass to read his current display.
I see. So what you really want is a Chrome box, just the box, and set the display resolution lower than the native display of a large panel. So if the large panel can do 2660 by 1440, you set it instead to 1080 by 720. Everything will be big.
Yeah.
And it'll be easy for him to read. Actually, that's what I'm doing right now. I have to my left a 4K 30-inch display. If I ran it at 4K, I wouldn't really be able to read it very well. So I run it at 2K, doubles the size of everything, and I can see it clearly at more than arm's length. It works very well.
And that just leaves everything permanently magnified.
Yes.
Now, is it possible still to get the touchscreen that you can do the touch magnification?
Sure. Sure, you just have to get a display that supports touch. And Chrome OS does touch pretty well, especially when you put those Android apps on there. I think this is a great solution for Dad. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888-ASK-LEO. Taking your calls, talking high tech. Was just mentioning the Samsung It was a leak of Samsung's new Chromebook Pro. Now, normally Chromebooks are kind of like netbooks. They're sold in the $150 to $300 price range. They're kind of cheap, light, cheesy. But I'm thinking they should be more and more used as a actual computer. A lot of schools are doing this, you know. So it should be nicer, a little nicer, better quality components, maybe a faster processor, more RAM, nicer screen. Samsung actually surveyed Chromebook users, and the code name for this device is Kevin. But the Samsung Kevin, which will be called the Chromebook Pro, should be out in the next week or two, October 24th, apparently. And it'll sell for a lot. It's $500, but it is not the compromise kind of netbook quality hardware. It's an aluminum body. It's a high res 3x2 screen, kind of like the Chromebook Pixel. 241 dots per inch, very high quality. Touch, a pen, not only touch, but a pen built in. Samsung's known for that in other devices, which shall not be named. And it's a convertible. You could flip it around, make it a tablet. I think this is going to be an interesting device. I'm a big fan of the expensive $1,000 Chromebook Pixel that Google was selling last year. They've discontinued it. But it opened my eyes as to how good a Chromebook can be with good hardware. And I'd like to see more, at least intermediate hardware, like $500 hardware. I think it'd be a great kind of fill a great hole in the market. Remember, sometimes a cheap computer is the costliest thing you can buy. Pete in Clinton Township. Hi, Pete. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. How are you doing today?
I am great. How are you?
Great. I'm the guy who went on my last cruise and got an Olympus TC4.
I remember. Yeah. How'd that work out for you?
Oh, my God. It was wonderful. What a great cruise. I got some great pictures. It was great.
I recommended it because it's rugged, it's compact, great images. You can even use it underwater.
I didn't do that. It was too cold.
Yeah, I don't think you're going to underwater in Alaska. But on your next beach trip, you can do it.
Right.
Yeah.
Hey, I got a quick question. I'm looking for a good Android phone. I have a Nexus 6.
I'm going to suggest, and this is my new advice to everybody, Stick with Google.
Okay.
There are great Android phones out there, including, by the way, the Note 7, except for that minor detail of blowing up. But otherwise, that was an amazing phone. Really good cameras.
How about the OnePlus? OnePlus 2 or OnePlus?
Love the OnePlus 3. Don't get the OnePlus 2. The OnePlus 1 was very good, but it's 2 years old now. Excellent battery life, 20-hour battery life. The OnePlus 3 has a fingerprint reader. I think any Android, actually any phone you get today, should have a fingerprint reader.
Does that have a port for
your
headphones?
Yes, it does.
Okay.
Everybody has a headphone jack except for Apple.
Okay.
And the Moto Z. I think it's a Z, yeah. And Motorola, I'm sure, is deeply regretting it at this point. Apple's big enough. Apple doesn't have to worry. People are going to buy it no matter what Apple does. But, yes, every other phone continues to carry this port that Apple has decided is out of date, which it is not.
My question, I have a Nexus 6, or should I upgrade that to a OnePlus 3? Or should I just...
No, if I were you, and I know it's pricey, if price is an issue,
okay,
then I would look at, yes, the OnePlus 3 or the Axon 7 from ZTE.
Okay.
Or the Huawei Honor 8. Those are all three $400 phones that are very good for $400. Here's the catch. Going forward, Google, two things are happening. Google, one, guarantees that a Google phone will get updates. And that is important because Android is constantly under attack. And there's malware out there, just like there is on Windows. There is on Apple as well, frankly. But Apple forces carriers to do those updates. You know, Apple phones get updated regularly and fast. Android phones... It's a little bit of a crapshoot. And so your only true guarantee is to get it from Google. The other thing that I think is very interesting, for the first time ever, this Google Pixel, which is coming out in the 20th.
That's a lot of money, though.
It's very expensive. I don't know. It makes me so mad that Google's charging this much. But Google's putting features on it that other Android manufacturers will not have access to, at least initially, including the Google Assistant. So Google has kind of said, in effect, we're going to make sure that our phones are the best Android experience, and any other Android phone is somewhat second class. That bothers me, but it's just something. It's a fact of nature. Okay, so I agree. At starting at $649, and by the way, I'm going to get the little one, the 5-inch one, not the big one. But starting at $649, that's pricey. The Axon 7, the OnePlus 3, the Honor 8, all three excellent Android phones. I do believe the OnePlus 3 will be updated. It has been so far very regularly. They've done a good job of that. I think the OnePlus 3 is a very good choice. That's a nice phone.
One final question for you.
Yeah.
Have you made my mom's spaghetti sauce?
Well, I'm kind of attached to my mom's spaghetti sauce.
I got you.
So I'm going to. Thank you for the recipe. I'm going to. But every time I sit down with a can of tomatoes, an onion, a carrot, some celery, I end up making my mom's spaghetti sauce.
Oh, I understand. Okay. If you want something different.
I will. Hey, I promise.
Jelly sauce is wonderful.
And your mom's is a marinara, right? No meat, right?
No, you can put meat in it. Yeah, okay. Heck yeah.
Well, but I'm looking for a good marinara because my mom's has a lot of meat in it.
I gotcha. Hey, buddy.
Hey, it's great to talk to you again. Thank you.
Thanks, Leo. Take care.
Thanks for the recipe, too. Appreciate it, Ricardo. Take care. I'm not Ricardo. Pete, Ricardo's next. Hi, Ricardo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo. How you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
Good. You know, long-time listener, first-time caller. Love the show.
Thank you, sir.
And so my lovely girlfriend got me a new updated white Amazon Echo.
Nice.
For my birthday.
What a nice person.
Oh, yeah, she's lovely. And so, you know, I just love this thing, right? I mean, I'm feeling like James T. Kirk or Spock or something. You know.
Computer.
You know, I want to sit in my living room, yeah. You know, Alexa, make my coffee.
I wish she would. I hate that, though, what you just did. And then she goes, I don't know what you're talking about, and it really makes me mad.
Well, I'm getting there slowly. So I have just a couple of questions I want to ask you about it because I feel like I'm on the cutting edge. I go to Best Buy, and I ask a lot of these guys about, you know, hubs and all this business, and half of them just really don't know what they're talking about. I mean, I do a little research, and I know more than they do. So, and, of course, I listen to your show. But here's one of my questions. I understand Google Home is coming out.
Yep. And they're making an Amazon Echo competitor. It'll be out in a couple of weeks.
Right. And I understand that they have this conversational artificial intelligence.
Ah. Hey, I have to take a break. Hang on, because I want to talk about the difference between Siri, Amazon's Echo, and what Google's up to. And we'll do that when we come back. I think this is a very exciting area. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We were talking to Ricardo in Laguna Niguel, California. Hi, Ricardo. Yeah, thanks for hanging on.
Hey, Leo.
We're talking about this exciting, brave new world. Now, we're at the very early stages of this. In fact, I got schooled by President Obama in this subject, believe it or not. He obviously has good science advisors and listens to them. He did an interview recently with Joy Ito of MIT's Media Lab, and he was talking about the artificial intelligence or machine intelligence revolution that's happening. And he was smart. He made a distinction, which I should make more often, between general artificial intelligence, what you were describing as the Star Trek future, you know? Hello, computer, and you talk to it. Or HAL 9000, you know, it's just there and you talk to it. And our current very kind of specialized artificial intelligence. We will get to that general state, but it may take longer than you think. It may take decades. But we're very rapidly getting to this kind of domain-specific artificial intelligence where you can ask, and you've experienced this. You can't get Echo to make you a cup of coffee yet.
Right.
But you can get her to play music, to tell you what the traffic's like, tell you what the weather's going to be. There's a lot of stuff it can do, and it's getting better and better. There was just an article in the Wall Street Journal by Walt Mossberg, who's, I think we all agree, a big fan of Apple, and he was really ripping Apple for Siri. He said Siri, Apple's artificial intelligence, is dumb and getting dumber, And I have to say, I agree. I've been using the iPhone 7. It's very disappointing. And it's because Apple chose to favor privacy. They don't want to pry into your life. Google, on the other hand, is collecting every bit of data it can about you. Now, it does it with your knowledge and permission, right? And there's even a dashboard where you can say, hey, get rid of that. I don't want you to keep that. And you don't have to use it. You can disable it. But because Google made this deal saying, look, we would like to read your email. We would like to look at your images. We'd like to know where you are at all times. If you use an Android phone, we're going to track you. But we're going to use that to your advantage because of Google Now and now Google Assistant. It'll know where you are. It'll know your habits. It will be a more intelligent, more useful assistant. And I think it is already than either Amazon or Siri. But Amazon has some interesting knowledge too, right? It knows what you buy. It knows what you like. So the Amazon Echo is great for buying stuff on Amazon.
Unfortunately.
You can. One of the things you can buy right now is the new Amazon Unlimited Music plan they launched this week. If you're only going to use it with one Echo, that's all you got, $5 a month, or is it four? $4 or $5 a month. And it's the same unlimited music that you'd get on Spotify or Apple Music. But it's so in other words, it's unlimited music through your Echo.
Right.
And that's pretty exciting. Echo also, Amazon, knowing that it didn't have the data that Google has moved faster in the smart home area. You can talk to your Smart Things hub and other hubs and turn on lights, open garage doors. I can ask my car how much gas is left. Amazon has created an ecosystem with other, you know, manufacturers to be very useful.
Right. Well, I can actually have it turn my coffee pot on.
Right.
I use an older off-on switch and then connect that
right
to the smart plug.
Right. Because it can control the Wemos, the on-off switches. It just, you need to have a coffee pot that works that way.
Yeah, you got to get an unsophisticated coffee pot or a super duper sophisticated
right
one that doesn't believe in electronics.
Right. You know? So what Walt's saying, which is, I think, very surprising coming from Walt Mossberg, is Apple may have hobbled itself in a way that's going to keep it out of this next generation of artificial or machine intelligence. Google, of course, has the lead on all of this. But Facebook will be doing stuff. Microsoft's doing stuff. And, of course, Amazon's doing stuff. This is going to be a very interesting 10 years.
Well, my question is regarding that intelligence business that Google has this conversational intelligence aspect that Amazon doesn't, right?
Yeah, it what it understands is context. So you can ask it, how old is Wilt Chamberlain? And it will tell you. And then you could say, how tall is he? And it will remember that you just asked a question about Wilt Chamberlain, so it'll give you Wilt Chamberlain's height.
Right, which is, wow, that's just one step closer to HAL 9000, right?
It seems as if it's understanding that you can have a conversation. So you can say, hey, what's a good restaurant, a good Italian restaurant around here? It'll give you a list, and you can say, make a reservation at this one. It'll say, how many? You say, for two. What time? 9 p.m. And it will make the reservation for you. That's much more useful, isn't it?
Absolutely. And that leads me to my question, which is, you know, is that hardware or is that software? In other words, you have said repeatedly that as time goes on, Amazon will continue to add to the, you know, to the intelligence software through updates of the Echo. So is it possible
yes
that once they figure out what Google's doing, they can actually make
yes
your Echo conversational
yes
as well over time?
There is hardware, obviously, and the Echo is doing something remarkable. It has 7 or 8 microphones in it. It's doing very smart stuff about hearing you. It's using a Ray microphone, so you can talk to it across the room and it'll understand you. You know, so there is already in the Echo hardware most of what it, you know, the hardware it needs. And now all the smarts is, and this is where privacy advocates worry, and I don't blame them, in order to understand what you're saying, Echo has to send the recording, the audio of what you just said, back to the home office. So it's listening for its trigger word. That it can do locally. It has enough smarts to say, oh, well, I know there's only 3 trigger words. I know my trigger word, And it's monitoring all the waveforms as it's always on listening, right? But it's not sending it back to Amazon. It's just saying, when I see the word Echo or whatever your word is, it could be Echo, Amazon, or Alexa. When it sees that word, it then says, oh, from now on, anything that comes after that word, I'm sending to the home office. Amazon's getting that recording, and the servers at Amazon are analyzing it.
Right.
Google, and I don't know what Amazon does. They don't tell us. I know Apple doesn't do this. Google saves those recordings and uses it to improve its intelligence overall. And the reason I know that is you can go to your Google dashboard and you can hear everything you've ever asked Google. You can hear the recording.
Right.
They preserve it because they want to get better and better. And that's going to be an advantage for them. And it's why Walt Mossberg, quite rightly, is worried that Apple's going to fall behind in this. Now, if you value privacy to the degree that you're willing to give up that convenience, then you'll probably use Apple products, and that's what Apple's banking on. But I personally choose the convenience.
Right. Of course.
I love that. I want it to know more about what I'm up to, so I can ask it, you know, what's the weather going to be like when I fly to Rio? You know, and it'll know I'm going to Rio because it saw the email in my Gmail.
Right.
Microsoft is kind of in the middle with that. They know everything you do on Windows. But only Google has that full ecosystem where they're, you know, especially if you have an Android phone and you use Google services, if you use Google Mail, they have access to a lot of detail about you. And you just, I mean, you need to be aware of it. You can decide not to do that, not to play that game. Or you can do what I do, which is say, yeah, baby, give it everything because I want it to get smarter.
Well, speaking of getting smarter, the second part of my question, so you're basically saying that I can keep the Echo and it's intelligent.
It will get smarter, yes. Yes. Same thing with the Google Hub or Hello. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Sorry, Ricardo.
Yes, of course.
Go on, though. We can continue to converse.
Oh, okay. You know, the second part of my question was, okay, so I'm not going to get rid of my Echo for a Google.
No. I envision a time when I may have a fireplace mantle with all of them.
I just love this thing. And it leads me to my second question.
You're not alone, by the way. People who have the Echo seem to really fall in love with it.
Oh, yeah. You just want to take full advantage of everything it does. I just installed Lutron dimmers in my house, and now I'm controlling my dimmers. I'm controlling my thermostat, et cetera, et cetera.
See, they did something smart with these Amazon skills, the Echo skills. They really made it easy for third parties to add to the capabilities. That was brilliant.
Right, absolutely.
Yeah.
Now, I've got a Venstar thermostat, but the problem with this is, my other question was, I have to say a specific phrase or keyword when I tell Google,
yes.
when I tell the Echo to do something.
That's how you trigger the tasks. You have to have the task opening phrase.
Right, but, you know, it's an awkward phrase, and I can't simply tell it, turn on the thermostat, turn off the thermostat, because the Venstar apparently doesn't have that in its brain. Now, is
that will improve.
Train it?
Train
it through a third-party app?
No, that's how Amazon does it, because each skill has a trigger phrase to trigger the skill's activation. So I can say, Echo, let's play Jeopardy. That's the trigger phrase. Then the Jeopardy game starts running. And that's the same thing with all of these skills, is they're kind of second-class citizens in that regard.
Right.
But Amazon definitely has a strategy around that, and I suspect you're going to see that change as well. And that's all software. None of that's in hardware.
Great. That's great. So
all at this point, all the upgrades will occur in software.
Great.
And by the way, server side, you don't update your firmware or anything. It's all on the server side. That's the way to do it. Yep. It's very exciting, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. It's really cool. I can't wait to see what's going to happen in the next 1, 2, 3 years.
And I have to say, you know, Lisa and I will compare, you know, OK Google versus Hey Siri. And it's just most of the time, Siri just doesn't get it right.
Well, thank goodness all I do is with Siri is, hey, Siri, call this person.
Yeah, that's Siri, basically what Walt Mossberg said. It's great for setting reminders, timers, and calling people. And that's about all it does.
Listen, thanks so much for your advice, Leo.
It's my pleasure. And this is exciting. Stay in touch, Ricardo. We got a lot more to talk about.
All right, man.
All right, bye. See ya. Bye-bye. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Time to talk to my favorite artificial intelligence, It's amazing the questions he can answer. From Gizneyland, Dick DiBartolo, Mad's maddest writer, and our Gizwiz. Hi, Dickie D.
Yeah, I don't want any gadget that can learn how to be smarter than me.
I mean, personality in my gadgets. I think this is the thing that's missing right now. They all have kind of similar voices. They all sound kind of robotic. And I think that's, by the way, intentional because there's a creepy line. And if they start getting a little too human, it's going to be creepy, right?
Oh, I guess in a way you're right.
But wouldn't you love to have Dick DiBartolo come out of that echo? I'd like to be able to say, hey, Dickie D, what time is it?
Leo, ask Alexa, I'm tired.
Perfect. You see?
There you go.
You see? That's what I want. I want a wiseacre. I don't need an Echo. I don't need a Google. I need a wiseacre. That would be money in that. Somebody make that.
There, you know what? There used to be, is he still up there? Yes. It was a teddy bear for old, slightly older kids called Little Bubba.
Little Bubba.
Yeah, and you would say, hey, Bubba, do you want to play? All right.
And I'm tired.
It was such a funny
like Krusty the Clown.
Yes.
Yeah,
hey, don't turn me upside down.
Hey, knock it off. I'm sleeping.
Exactly.
Dick joins us every week to talk about gadgets. He is the king of gadgets. That's why we call him the Gizwiz. His website is gizwiz.biz, GIZWIZ.BIZ. And if you go there, you'll see the gadgets he talks about, not only here, but everywhere, like on World News Now and all over, and on his own podcast, the weekly Gizwiz. What do you got for us this week?
Well, I have a couple things from Interbike. I know you like the Alexa. I got Alexa on my mind now. The Lumajax, the jacket that lit up for
you. Yeah, that was cool.
So if it's too warm for a jacket, the Lumos lighted bike helmet, 10 LEDs in the front, 16 red LEDs in the back, a little remote control for your handlebar.
What?
And you
like you a turn it. Signal?
It is exactly right. There are 11 hidden amber LEDs right and left. And when you want to make a turn, you hit that. And it's really neat. And a brake light.
So no, I was just going to ask. It needs a brake light. It has a brake light?
Yes, as you stop, all the lights light up red, so it lets you know that you're stopping.
Either that or the driver behind you gets so distracted by your helmet that he plows right into you.
That could be.
Oh, Marge, look at that guy's head's all lighted up!
Crash!
Alexa,
why did you let me do that?
Don't let me drive into people. Yeah, you know, the Tesla's not supposed to let you do that.
Yeah, I know. Did you prove it wrong?
Not yet.
Oh, okay.
Not yet. Although you do feel like kind of a sap when your Tesla jams on the brakes because you weren't paying attention.
Oh.
It lights up. It jams on the brakes. It slows you down. It goes ram ram ram, and you feel like the car's smarter than me. I almost ran into that.
Oh.
Yeah.
It's
kind of embarrassing.
And I don't like that thing in the back that says idiot driving, that little light that goes on.
that stays on for a day after you do every time you do that. Yeah. Yeah.
They should take that out. Just a fun little thing I found at the show. It's right now it's on a lot of Montague bikes, but soon it'll be available. It's a luggage rack, Leo, that you clip onto the back of the seat. And then when you get home, you release a little clip and the luggage rack's folds down under the bike and it becomes a bike stand.
Oh.
That's
cool.
Clever. It's very clever.
That's cool.
Montague bikes, and that's
you can tell that Dick lives in Manhattan and doesn't own a car. Do you bike around the city ever?
No, I scooter around the city.
What?
No, I mainly scooter in the park.
Wait, you mean like a Razor scooter?
Yeah, I still have my Razor scooter and I still use it.
Not an electric one, you pedal whatever you. What do you call that?
No.
You do with your foot.
A ride-on scooter.
Oh, it has power.
No. No. Yeah, the power's my sneakers.
Yeah. There should be. It's not pedaling.
I'm not even into the city bike, only because city bike is everywhere, but drivers are crazy.
Yeah.
And the
Well, that's why you need a light-up helmet and a light-up jacket and all that stuff.
Yeah, then I'm afraid I'm going to get mugged for everything I'm wearing.
Steal your stuff.
So subways and cabs.
Yeah, subways are great in New York. Love the subways. You'll find more information about the Lumos helmet and the jacket from last week if you're a bicyclist or if your kids. Really, the thing is for kids, you know, put this helmet on them with the lights and they'll be so much safer. I was, you know, remember when they started putting lights in kids' shoes?
Yes, they still do.
Yeah, I thought that was a great idea. That's because LEDs got so inexpensive and they work so long. They're so robust and you don't need a lot of battery for them.
No, absolutely.
Yeah. So find out more at his website, gizwiz.biz. You can also play the what the heck is it contest. That is, if you click the link that says what the heck is it, hard to find. A close-up picture of a gadget. Get it right, you have a chance at an autographed copy of Mad Magazine. Get it wrong, you have an even better chance at an autographed copy of Mad Magazine. Mr. D, thank you.
Thank you, sir.
And we'll see you soon.
Next week.
All right. Jerry in Indio, our last call of the day, Jerry.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm
wonder
great.
If you could help me out.
I'm trying. What can I do?
You know, like a while back, Microsoft was sending you like a little message on your laptop.
Yeah.
Saying upgrade.
Yeah.
Well, I tried to upgrade, and for some reason, it just froze, and it just stayed that way. And every time I try to turn on my laptop... It
was stuck.
Yeah, it got stuck.
You were not alone. A lot of people, in fact, some of my staff, that happened to them. So the Microsoft Store will fix that for you, but you have to find a Microsoft Store. I don't know if there's one near Indio. I doubt there is.
I looked, and I didn't see nothing.
Yeah. I mean, there is. So if you could find a Microsoft Store, they're not as plentiful as the Apple Stores or is Starbucks or something, but if you could find one, you can bring it in, because this is not an unusual problem. My suggestion is call Microsoft. So the problem is you don't get the free version of Windows 10 if you didn't upgrade. And you got stuck before it clicked, which means if you got it to work today, you wouldn't get a free version. That expired back in April. But... because it stalled on you, and so many people had this exact experience, if you call Microsoft and tell them that, I think they will still give you the free version. But you need to get their help, either at the store or by calling them. Say it's stuck. They'll help you get unstuck. And it's my understanding you'll still get a free copy of Windows 10, which you do want, which you really do want. And free is great, right? Good price. Hey, I'm out of time. Thanks for joining me. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. See you next time. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy Show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, it's just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows on the Netcast Network. It's called TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, Security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on. And on. You even get your daily dose of tech news with Tech News Today. And of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guy show. Thanks for joining me. I'll see you next time.